If you have a smart speaker, you have access to the entire world of NPR and St. Louis Public Radio. All the latest news and all the captivating stories. Activate our voices with yours by telling your smart speaker to play St. Louis Public Radio.
From St. Louis Public Radio. This is Politically Speaking. Missouri House Speaker Dean Plocker is one of eight Republicans seeking to be the next Secretary of State. And on the latest episode of Politically Speaking, the DePere Republican explains why he's the best candidate for the job and answers questions about an ethics committee controversy that has taken up a lot of time and energy in the Missouri House. Let's hit the music.
This is the Politically Speaking podcast, the definitive show about Missouri politics.
My promise to St. Louis was that I would do the absolute most for each and every person, starting with those who have the very least.
What I wanted to do was look and see what other states are doing.
We have to be willing to change those laws, that they are balanced and they affect everybody equally.
As somebody that grew up in the St. Louis area, in North St. Louis County, I didn't know any lawyers growing up.
We got to find long-term solutions to make government better, but also to be able to provide services to people.
I don't want to leave that federal money that we've been leaving all these years on the table.
We need to be spending this money to take care of Missourians.
I thought we accomplished a lot this year, but a lot more needs to be done.
And welcome to Politically Speaking. I'm your host, St. Louis Public Radio political correspondent Jason Rosenbaum. Joining me in mid-Missouri, she covers all things state government and state politics for St. Louis Public Radio.
Sarah Kellogg.
And joining us in St. Louis, he is one of the eight Republican Secretary of State candidates. He's currently the Speaker of the Missouri House and a state legislator representing DePere, Town and Country, Warson Woods?
Part of Chesterfield.
Part of Chesterfield. Who are you, by the way?
My name's Dean Plocker.
Thank you for coming on the show. I was going to make a joke about he's one of 8,000 candidates, but I feel like after interviewing all these Secretary of State candidates, that joke is really falling flat.
I know. We're only like halfway through.
We're getting there. So for the 2024 election cycle, your original plan was to run for lieutenant governor. You switched, I think, on the last day of filing to Secretary of State.
Yes.
What prompted you to do that?
Well, I've always had an interest in elections. I'm kind of a team player. The lieutenant governor field at the time looked like a good spot because there were so many people running for Secretary of State at the time. I should have evaluated a little bit different, but I've been volunteering as a Missouri election judge prior before getting elected. I have a securities industry background. I love elections. I've been carrying IP reform for 3 years. Before then, it was carried by other gentlemen for the last three. So I've been a big advocate for protecting Missouri's constitution and making sure that our elections are fair and transparent and, easy to vote, hard to cheat is what I've always said. So it seemed to be a good fit. When Caleb dropped out, it seemed to be a great opportunity to fill a void that I think the public needs. They needed a good candidate with a good background in that race. And I talked to my wife about it, who was a big advocate of it from the very beginning, actually, even before we even filed for the other office. But I'm excited about it. This seems to fit a whole lot better. I can serve the state. I've enjoyed this for the last 9 years. And it's a substantive role that I think is so important with what is going on today.
You're a good segwayer. You know, I was going to ask, you know, were you majorly influenced by Senate President Pro Tem Caleb Rowden dropping out of the race? Is that really what pulled you there? And there were some other interests as well?
Well, I think you look at the field as a whole. I was asked to run for lieutenant governor by a couple people, and I did. But then when Caleb dropped out, a lot of phone calls really started pouring in. And at the time, even before that, they're like, "Why are you running for this other office when you should be running for Secretary of State?" I had a little bit of buyer's remorse for the lieutenant governor position. But I'm a team player, and when the things circled up the way they did, it just seemed to fall into place. I got what I wanted and was able to run for Secretary of State.
What do you think you would offer as Secretary of State that is different from the seven other Republicans running for the post?
Oh, yeah. Well, it's a competitive field. There's a lot of us. You know, I have a unique background. I think the Secretary of State's going to need to work well with the legislature. I've demonstrated that as the Speaker. I'm also the only candidate that has a securities background. I work for Franklin Templeton before I went to law school. I have a huge opinion about how our Constitution is affected by out-of-state liberal billionaires. I filed the initiative petition bill initially 6 years ago. I've been a big advocate of pushing that. I've been a big advocate of pushing SJR 78, which is the anti-ranked choice voting, making it only citizens can vote. It's important to me that we're protecting our Constitution, that we're protecting our right to vote, where only citizens should vote. So I think I bring a strong track record to the candidacy, and we'll do a great job.
All right, let's rip the Band-Aid off of this. I'm sure you're thrilled to talk about this part of the campaign. So you were surrounded under what I would classify as a controversy, a cloud, a tizzy. You would probably call it like a witch hunt or something like that, involving the Ethics Committee looking into your advocacy for a constituent management program, questions over travel reimbursements, and firing of staff. So other candidates have come on the show and alluded to this, and I would like to give you a chance to respond to this question. If Republican voters are reading about all that coverage and they have concerns, what would you say to them?
Let's just take it head on. I don't have a problem addressing it whatsoever, and I haven't from the beginning. These are baseless claims brought about by bureaucrats who are trying to attack me doing my job as speaker. I've been, I believe, a successful speaker by pushing conservative legislation. We've tried to reduce the size of government. We have. We've reduced the size of government by over 13,000 workers in the last 10 years. We've reduced our budget while we've cut taxes $1 billion. I've been a big advocate of conservative reforms, and I believe the bureaucrats in the building don't like that. They're attacking me just like they're attacking President Trump. I'll take it head on. I was vindicated further. The Ethics Committee dismissed everything outright because there was nothing there. So, no, I think that actually makes me a better candidate because they're attacking me for the successes we've had as a whole in the House because we passed conservative legislation.
The one thing, though, that I've had some pause over is the reimbursement part. You've said that you made a mistake by reimbursing with House funds things that had already been reimbursed by your campaign. I want to make it clear that I'm describing that correctly, correct?
Yes, I sought reimbursement for something that had already been reimbursed.
How did that happen? Because I've reimbursed myself for thousands of dollars worth of things, and that has never happened to me before where I accidentally reimbursed something I'd already been reimbursed for.
There's too many cooks in the kitchen. Okay, there's too many people asking for something I didn't ask for. My staff asked for it. Other people put things on a bill that I didn't bill. So there were too many cooks in the kitchen. Furthermore, I think if you read the most recent attack on me, because they're still coming for me, the liberal bureaucrats are still attacking me. They filed a complaint against me 2 weeks ago in court.
A lawsuit.
Yes. And so when you read that lawsuit admits that they were coming for me. They were attacking me. They were trying to set me up for this back in July. Just read the lawsuit. They were coming for me. They were trying to set me up for that.
And one other question on this. Are you going to ask the Attorney General's office to represent you and former Speaker Jetton?
I'm going to try to seek outside counsel, but I have to talk to the Attorney General. I haven't spoken to the Attorney General yet.
Let's move on to discuss the actual office, which includes monitoring securities, which you've talked about. You know, it also deals with registering businesses, overseeing elections. Why are you qualified to do this job?
Well, I mean, I understand securities. I was licensed, went to law school, further studied that issue. I think we should be there as a facilitator of businesses, make it easy for businesses to be licensed, registered, whatnot. But we need to have some background checks on those businesses. Often with the securities industry, you often hear about the elderly being taken advantage of. I think if you're going to sell a security, you need to make sure that you're transparent there, too, that you're duly licensed and qualified to do it. We have to protect our elderly and the vulnerable. And I think the Secretary of State is in a key position to be able to do that.
What would you do as Secretary of State that's different from what Secretary Ashcroft has done in the past 7+ years?
You know, I think Secretary Ashcroft has done a fine job. I think we have some very secure elections in the state of Missouri, but there's still more work to be done. You can't do it all. I believe we have non-citizens voting in our elections. So I certainly think we need to make sure that only U.S. citizens are voting in our elections. We also have to clean up our voter rolls. We at one point had a system called ERIC, where you could compare with other states who's on what voter roll. I think we have to make sure our voter rolls are clean and up to date. So those are some small things, but big things, because while I don't believe the majority of people voting in the state are illegal citizens, illegal aliens, rather, we need to make only citizens voting. We need to have a way to do that. We had a bill in the House this year that would have put a mark on your driver's license or state ID that would have indicated that you're a citizen. I just think it needs to be able to be documented that you're a citizen, make it easy for those people to vote and hard to cheat. But right now it's actually easy to cheat, and that's wrong.
Missouri made the decision to leave ERIC, and it definitely became news. Do you support that decision? Is that something that you agreed with?
You know, I don't know enough about why we left ERIC, but I do know the problems caused by leaving ERIC. So I think a solution needs to be crafted where we adopt a program either like ERIC or ERIC or something to remedy the problem. Whatever ERIC was that was caused, I think it's caused other problems by leaving it, because we are not able to really keep our voter rolls clean because we've left that type of software. We need to be able to double cross check our voting rolls to make sure that those that are on our voter rolls are only U.S. citizens, only Missouri citizens. And that's key, because I think that's part of being protected in our Constitution. You have to be a citizen of this country. It means something. And, we have green card holders that are paying taxes. I'd encourage them to become lawful citizens, our forefathers that came over to this country became citizens.
Well, you actually segued to a devil's advocate question I've been asking all the candidates. So I understand and do not disagree that if you came into this country illegally, you should not vote under any circumstances. But let's talk about legal citizens, green card holders. What is the argument that a green card holder should not be able to vote in local elections when they pay taxes, when the city government affects their lives, and when they have come into done everything they could to come into the country legally? Like, make the case why they shouldn't be able to vote for St. Louis Board of Aldermen.
Are they Missouri citizens?
Are they Missouri citizens? What do you mean by that?
Are those individuals Missouri citizens or just green card holders working here paying taxes?
I guess because they are not a citizen of the United States, they would not be technically a citizen.
Then they shouldn't be voting. I would incentivize them to become U.S. citizens, Missouri citizens. It's that way. It's commonplace. I mean, you can go work in another country. Go work in Europe. You pay taxes in Europe, but you don't vote in their elections. You need to be a U.S. citizen. It means something. It's something I'm very proud of. I think most people are. Are people wear the uniform to serve, to protect our Constitution. Our Constitution means something. It should be protected with initiative petition reform, and citizens also should be the only ones voting.
So perhaps an area that has become more controversial as of late with the Secretary of State is libraries. I think that there are a lot of people who saw what Secretary of State Jay Ashcroft did with his rules about, like, saying you're not going to get state money unless you follow some sort of rules and regulations around purportedly inappropriate material being displayed or where it is. What did you think about that, and would you do anything differently on that front?
I support Secretary Ashcroft's opinion and decision on the promulgating the rules. He did his best to define what is pornographic or adult-related content. It's hard to do. The Supreme Court found it very difficult to do. It's a rather subjective measure. While I adamantly respect the right to free speech, there are some things that I think everybody can agree children should not have access to. There's a way to do it. Our libraries are built on many different rules, whether they're directly elected or whether they're appointed by the mayor or the county commissioners. There's a lot of things that could be looked at, but I think, again, what we're looking at is it's transparency. I mean, right? I want to know what my children might have access to when I would drop them off at the St. Louis County Library. I want to know why, and if it's something that's objectionable, maybe I should. They're children, just as I could keep them out of an R-rated movie, X-rated movie. Those are things that I don't want my children to witness. And if it's something that is questionable, I don't see why I can't go in myself. And just as you would take your kids to something, you might have a good faith belief that it's good for children, and you're halfway through a production perhaps, and you just choose to walk out. But you need transparency. I think Secretary Ashcroft has a balanced approach that makes it fair. The one thing you can do is Secretary, that I would certainly do, is put the carrot out there. I mean, listen, our children should not be subject to this type of material, pornographic, very descriptive, very visual material. And I think that if you have the ability to withhold grant money, and the Secretary of State does, I would withhold that. I want people to be accountable. I want things to be transparent. And I think it goes to show you, too, it takes a little bit of a spark for people to have an interest in it, when in fact they should have had an interest in this a long time ago. Who's appointing these library people? Are they directly elected? Is it the county commissioner that's electing them? What are their terms of service? Are they replaceable? Sometimes, sadly, it takes an outcry of this. I've been traveling around the state, and I've seen libraries in certain counties have these problems, and I'm there for them. I think we should keep things transparent for the parents so their children are not subjected to this type of material.
So we had Greene County Clerk Shane Scholler on the show recently, and when he spoke about libraries, he emphasized how a bulk of the funding comes from property taxes and that they're normally governed by boards. So citizens who are concerned about what's happening at their local library should really go to the local level rather than the state level. So this is all to say, for my question, do you think that the Secretary of State's office is involved with libraries the right amount? What change, if you want to see a change, would you like to see regarding the Secretary of State's office's relationship with libraries?
I respect local control. I don't think the Secretary of State needs to be a library czar, if you will. I don't think that's the purpose of big government. Government shouldn't be doing that. This should be at the local level. People should be able to go to the library board and express their opinion. How those library board members are appointed or elected, I think, is a big concern. I think people need to be more aware of what they're doing. And it's kind of like voting. It's one of those duties you have as a citizen to participate. And, you know, in an April election, you get 20% turnout and people complain. Well, maybe they need to go vote, just like I think they need to serve on a jury. It's part of our civic duty.
One of the prime roles of Secretary of State is to coordinate with the county's local election officials. What would be your posture forging those relationships, especially if those officials have much different visions on how elections should be run?
Well, again, I think you need to create a level playing field for our 114 county officials, county clerks to work with. You need to have fair and transparent elections where, I'll say this again, it's easy to vote but hard to cheat. I think you need to help them with the resources that they have to impose regulations that are standard regulations. I'll go back to the only citizens voting component. But I don't believe the role of the Secretary of State is to micromanage these election authorities in various counties. There's several different classes of counties, and depending on the class of county, your role serving as county clerk is changing and different. And they're tasked with an unenviable amount of responsibility at times, whether they make payroll, whether they conduct an election, how they handle their office is a big role. I'm telling you, they are a very thankless job. Work hard. I think you need to offer them a system like Eric so they can clean up the voter rolls. I think that's something I would look into. I don't believe that you need to, I'll just throw this out there too. Another issue that when I've been traveling and meeting with many of the clerks, they're all concerned about hand counting ballots.
Wow, you really are a good segueer, because that was my next question.
Well, good, because it's an important issue. I fervently believe in paper ballots. You have to have a trail to be able to track things. But the rule is already there. You already hand count ballots. You already are required to hand count 5% of your precincts to check for errors. And the errors just aren't there to mandate that you would hand count every ballot.
So you are not, okay, there have been other candidates who said hand count every single ballot and do not use vote counting machines.
It's incredibly impractical. I think if there's a margin of error, you should count every ballot, but that hasn't been demonstrated. And that's why the law is in place right now, where you do have to hand count 5% of your precincts to check for a margin of error. The error rate is just not there. But if there is an error rate there that rises to that level, then I think you would have to hand count every ballot. But No, I believe in fair, transparent elections that aren't connected to the internet, that you know, you're keeping your data secure by keeping the record in place with paper ballots.
We'll be right back after this quick break with House Speaker Dean Plocker. And we're back on Politically Speaking with House Speaker Dean Plocker. He is one of eight Republicans seeking to be the next Secretary of State. Let's stay on the topic of elections and talk about absentee balloting. One of the biggest changes during the Ashcroft administration was the implementation of an early voting period where you can go in person to a designated place and cast your ballot for any reason. What do you think of that system, and would you want anything changed about it if you become Secretary of State?
Well, that system was just implemented, and so I voted for it. So that system was predicated, I think it has been demonstrated that there's a need to vote early. Vote early once, right? And you may travel. You may have to take care of a loved one. You may, you know, I want people to be able to work. So we implemented a system that allows for a short period of early voting. This year, I could be wrong, but I believe it begins July the 23rd for early no excuse absentee ballots.
Sounds about right, but I'm not 100% sure. If you're wrong, you get struck by lightning.
Probably.
On that.
But, you know, I think I want to be able to make sure our military can vote. I want to make sure our teachers can vote. I want to make sure our nurses and doctors can vote. Sometimes it's tough to be there, but we've given that's a long enough window. I don't believe we need to lengthen that window. I think there was a lot of compromise made at crafting that. Again, I'm going to go back to what I want. I want only U.S. citizens, Missouri citizens voting in our elections. I want our Constitution protected. I don't want liberal out-of-state billionaires influencing our Constitution and our ability with our votes. And I want it to be easy voting, but hard to cheat.
We'll get to the non-citizen part a little bit more and the IP process. But, okay, one of my biggest problems with the absentee ballot system, and this is just me, Jason Rosenbaum, speaking, is the excuse system when you send it via mail or drop it off to an election authority. There is no way for a local election official to investigate or look for whether you are actually going to be out of town or whether you're actually ill or whether, you know, all the other excuses. Every election official I've talked to, Republican and Democrat, have said the excuse-based system is a joke and is unenforceable. Why should we keep it? And would you advocate to get rid of it if you're Secretary of State?
No, I don't want to advocate to get rid of it. We already allow a no-excuse absentee early voting component, which I articulated, I believe, begins, 14 days prior to the election, somewhere around there, 10 days. That gives you the window. If you're going to be traveling and you're going to be out of town, you can apply for an absentee ballot or you can go in and vote. I believe early voting this year with an excuse begins June the 25th. That's plenty of time. You can go in and vote at your election authority. I am nervous about randomly allowing people to mail in their ballots. We have very secure elections in Missouri. I want to make sure those that serve in the military overseas can get their ballots in, and they have to do it by mail. I want to protect those that are protecting our country and protect their right to vote. But no, I wouldn't change it. You have to take people on their word, but I do believe you have to trust, but you also have to verify. And I think
they're not verifying. That's my point. No. And none of the local election officials have the manpower to verify.
They verify their signature, and they should verify whether they're only Missouri citizens. Okay? Listen, I mean, you're never going to be able to make it a perfect world, but you should be able to easily verify that you are only a Missouri U.S. citizen when you vote. Now, if you lied because you weren't really out of town, but you're still a citizen, that's on you. But you should be able to vote because you're a U.S. Missouri citizen.
I normally direct this question for candidates who are maybe less enthused about the early voting period. So this might not be, and that's not you. But I do want to know if you would support making Election Day a state holiday for people, who wouldn't be able to go in early and want to vote on Election Day.
Our country's worked now for almost 250 years without it being a holiday. I think it should be able to work for the next 250 years without it being a holiday. You know, I think there's some element of a civic duty to go in and vote. We did pass a bill out of the House this year. I don't think it passed through the Senate, as did so many good things fail in the Senate due to lack of so much. But we passed a bill that allows your employer, if you take time off to go vote, or if you serve as an election judge, to get a tax credit. We need to get more election judges out there, to be honest with you. When I used to work as an election judge, I was by far the youngest individual out there. Everyone else is a geriatric volunteer, and they've been doing it for 20, 30 years. We have to find newer, younger people that really strongly, fervently believe in democracy to come out and serve. And what we've done there is we've allowed businesses to use that as a tax deduction if they choose to pay their employees while they serve as an election judge.
You spoke earlier about a House bill that would have put a mark on driver's licenses for people who were U.S. citizens. And so
yes.
This kind of relates to my next question. Are there any changes that you would want to make to how the state's government issued photo identification requirement is currently arranged? Or do you feel like the way that it's structured has gone well so far?
I think it's all right. I think it could be improved. I fervently believe you should have to be a citizen again to vote, and our voter IDs. Our IDs for state individuals should indicate your citizenship. You do not have to be a Missouri citizen to obtain a Missouri driver's license. So you can easily go in, and I was just there the other day getting a real ID, and they asked me, are you registered to vote at this address? And I said, of course, yes. But what if I wasn't? Well, we would just register you. And I just paused, took a breath, and thought hard about that, in the sense that, wait a minute, you're just going to register an individual that hasn't proven their citizenship? Yeah, that means people can vote that are not U.S. citizens. That's a problem. I think we need to have, when we pass voter ID, I think it should include a sticker on the driver's license that shows that you're a citizen of the state of Missouri, or just a regular ID. You don't have to have a driver's license to vote, just a state ID that has a point on it that points out that you are a Missouri citizen. That was House Bill 1413. It was a sticker on the ID, passed out of the House. I think it needs to keep being worked on. I don't think it's a perfect bill, but I love to see that get some traction when I serve as Secretary of State.
House Democrats had a lot of criticism for that bill, in part saying they were worrying it was going to lead to maybe profiling or targeting of people who just don't have, you know, that marker. And it might be not even people trying to vote, just kind of living their day-to-day lives. What do you have to say to that criticism?
The Constitution exists for a reason. People have their due process rights, and that's important. I just think that was just an unfounded claim, another way to kill a good bill.
One thing that will be on the ballot this year is a measure that bans ranked choice voting and would without question ban non-citizens from voting. What do you think of this proposal?
Oh, I love it. Ironically, the ballot language on HR 78, which is Senator Brown's ranked anti-ranked choice voting, was similar to what was in the initiative petition bill. And the language in the initiative petition bill moved it from all citizens to only citizens, which is, I think, an important change. And there was a lot of consternation regarding that initiative petition bill in the Senate, but the language was still there on HJR 78. It goes to show you that out-of-state liberal billionaires are, in fact, trying to covertly go at our Missouri Constitution. But getting back to HJR 78, ranked choice voting is not good. Only U.S. citizens voting is good. Therefore, I would clearly vote for HJR 78.
So you've spent a lot of time on the show saying, I think you said affirmatively, you think non-citizens are voting in Missouri elections.
Yes.
First of all, what proof do you have that that's the case?
Well, that's the problem. As you alluded to a moment ago, Jason, there's just not a lot of systems of checks and balances. So it's difficult to check. You don't know whether a person's a citizen or not necessarily, but because they came in with a driver's license and a voter ID card, because all you need to get a voter ID card is a driver's license utility bill. Nothing that says you're a citizen. So you can go in and just vote. I don't know the percentage, but the fact that it's out there right now in the last 4 years, 10 million illegals have crossed into this border, into the United States. That's dangerous, okay? They're not vetted. We don't know who they are. And right now in Missouri, we believe we have 70,000 plus illegals in our state. Now, they're obviously, hopefully, not all voting, but what's to say that not one of them's voting?
I can't answer that question, but I do want to have a follow-up to that. So Missouri's had a Republican Secretary of State for 8 years. I would guess the vast majority of local election officials, except even in St. Louis and Kansas City, because they have bipartisan boards, are Republicans. So are you telling me that Republicans have been letting undocumented immigrants just vote willy-nilly in the
not
election?
Not knowingly.
But they are responsible for that. So you're saying that like they haven't
exactly
done
that's exactly why we need 1413 passed or a derivative thereof. It needs to be
worked on. And
that's
the House bill you're talking
about.
Yes,
that's the voter ID component that indicates that you are a Missouri citizen on your driver's license or state ID. You must be able to document that you're a citizen to vote. Once a citizen, always a citizen, you should have the right to vote. The state should provide you with that ID, and you should be able to go in and vote. But right now, there's no way to affirmatively check whether or not you were a citizen of this country and of this state when you vote.
I want to move on to making it harder to amend Missouri's constitution. And if you are Secretary of State, do you plan to advocate for that?
I will. I have. I'd be, you know, true to my word on something I've stood for 6 years now. You know, I know that everyone wants to ridicule the ballot candy. You know, both sides will use the ballot candy as they need to. The Constitution gives you 50 words to explain to the voter what they're doing. Ideally, it would be nice if it was single subject, but they often use ballot candy to get to other things. But I just think there needs to be a higher threshold. I trust the voters, but at a low threshold, when you throw billions of dollars in it, when the East Coast and West Coast billionaires that are often George Soros liberals want to come in and change our Constitution, they put the ballot candy in, then they put a lot of ads on the radio and on television, and it sounds really good. If you raise the threshold a little bit, I believe it allows the voters to be more informed. I just want the voters to be able to be informed about what they're voting on to change our Constitution. The last example would be the marijuana initiative that overwhelmingly passed, but it passed with 20-plus pages into our Constitution. Our Constitution is about as thick as the King James Bible. Our federal Constitution is smaller, significantly smaller, and that's because it takes a higher threshold to change our federal Constitution. I think our state Constitution is a sacred document, much like our federal Constitution, and it is willy-nilly amended. I don't think it needs to be amended so easy. I think voters need to be better informed with greater transparency as to what that process is when we change our Constitution, and that's why I've supported initiative petition reform.
So this year, the proposed amendment would have required a concurrent majority, which is a majority of Missouri's congressional districts. The year before, it was 60% of voters and then 58. Is there kind of a preferred proposal you would like to see? Kind of what would you want to see in that kind of space?
Well, what I want to see is I believe that people should come together and there needs to be compromise. I was not a huge advocate of the concurrent majority. I believe all congressional districts matter in the state of Missouri, and therefore I was a defender of the higher threshold of 57-58%. And I think that would treat everybody equally across the state. But, you know, at the end of the day, our elected officials that serve need to make compromise, hopefully. And I just say, let it go to the voters. This has to go to the voters. And if they want to accept it, they can accept it. If they want to turn it down, they turn it down. If they turn it down, I contend what they're doing is they're opening up Missouri to the liberal out-of-state interests that are buying their way into Missouri's Constitution.
So on changing state statute, right now, there's nothing stopping from voters electing a statute change, saying yes to changing something in Missouri's laws, and then the state legislature turning around and undoing it, or at least modifying it, the very next session. Would you support a state law that at least for a period of time protects or shields voter passed state statutes from being majorly changed?
I think we already have a state law. It's called re-election. And I was there. I have supported bills that passed the House that were overturned by the will of the people in a general election, and we haven't gone back to them because I took it as the people spoke.
So like right to work, for
exactly.
Example.
Absolutely right, Jason. So, you know, listen, the ballot box means something. It's something people have fought for to protect and died for. And I believe that the ballot box means something. And so while I don't have a problem at all with our citizens overturning a state statute with 50% plus one, I do have a problem with out-of-state liberals buying their way into Constitution and making constitutional changes with 50% plus one. It needs to be a higher threshold for initiative petition, constitutional initiative petition.
If Missourians vote for a constitutional amendment legalizing abortion, would that dampen the enthusiasm for Republicans to pursue the threshold boost, since passage of it would then make it harder to remove or change the abortion legalization amendment?
You know, I won't be in the legislature. That's looking into the silver ball, the crystal ball, if you will.
I was going to say no one's looking silver into ball, a silver ball.
Ball, silver bullet. Yeah, that's a, you know, that's it's a tough question. I mean, I've stood for life. I stand for life. I hope the citizens would vote that down. Allowing late term abortion in particular, I find that particularly heinous. 40 weeks. But, you know, I mean, the will of the people and who they elect and their elected leaders may come to the conclusion that that needs to go back to the ballot. And I don't know how that would affect. There's just way too many variables.
What do you mean by the late-term abortion part? Because, like, the proponents of that are going to say, point to the language and says it would allow the legislature to regulate abortion after fetal viability. So where do you get the fact that you'd be able to do an abortion after 40 weeks? Which I know is a talking point among Republicans, but I know that the proponents are going to really vigorously disagree with that.
They may disagree, but I think it's the subjective component of where they're going with the initiative.
There have been proposals to raise the threshold in Arkansas and Ohio, that raised the constitutional threshold, and they failed pretty miserably. So what would make you think that Missouri would be any different than those states, which Arkansas, I would argue, is a more Republican state than Missouri. Sarah worked there for a while. You can disagree with me on that, Sarah.
I would concur. I think I've never witnessed a quicker presidential call, which that year, which definitely went for Trump in Arkansas. So a pretty Republican state down there.
Ohio is also a pretty Republican state, too. Why do you think Missouri would agree with making it harder to amend the Constitution?
You know, I just think the citizens need a choice. I'm not going to back down for what I believe in. And that's why I've often been under attack lately. I stand for what I believe in. I'm going to fight for what I believe in. I believe in passing a conservative budget. I believe in passing conservative legislation. And I'm going to stand for what I want to believe in and what I've advocated for. I'm going to advocate for conservative policies, conservative budget, a conservative policy with regard to changing our Constitution. And I'm not going to shy away from that. Let the people decide. That's what the ballot box is for. But I don't believe out-of-state billionaires should be changing our Constitution. I do not believe illegal aliens should be voting in our elections. And I'm not going to shy away from that.
Okay, I do have to ask one more question. You said that, like, out-of-state billionaires have pumped billions of dollars into Missouri.
Millions.
I was like, I have been following Missouri ballot initiatives for a while, and they do pump a lot of money. They pump in millions.
It seems there's a lot of zeros flowing into Missouri.
I understand the argument that, like, you don't like that some of these progressive nonprofits are giving money to, like, the abortion initiative or minimum wage or, you know, what was Clean Missouri. But, you know, they're also giving a lot of money for sports betting, too. Like, DraftKings isn't part of a Missouri company.
It cuts both ways, Jason.
And also marijuana,
agree.
Too.
Well, like, it cuts both ways. What's good for the goose is good for the gander. I think Missourians should be able to affect themselves more than out-of-state interest. And right now, I see the out-of-state liberals affecting our state more. But like you pointed out, when it comes to sportsbook or when it comes to marijuana, there's other entities that are at play, whether they be at liberal or conservative, it doesn't matter. I don't think out-of-state interests should be affecting our constitutions. Missourians should be able to determine their own fate.
Speaker Plocker, thank you so much for coming on this show. And we appreciate all the Secretary of State candidates coming on. Sarah, I think we're speed running through the Secretary of State candidates.
I love this video game.
I'm really enjoying this. And if you do enjoy hearing from Secretary of State candidates, make sure to follow all of our coverage at stlpr.org. Politically Speaking is a product of St. Louis Public Radio, which is part of the University of Missouri system, specifically the University of Missouri St. Louis. And Speaker Plocker, how could people find out more about your campaign on the internet?
I believe I'm at plockerformissouri.com. I have a Twitter handle, Dean Plocker. I also have a Facebook handle. I think it's much the same. I'm not a very big user of social media, though. I just try to listen to the voters and talk to them. But I am out there on social media, and I'm out there in the web.
Thank you very much. Until next time, so long. Politically Speaking is produced by Sarah Kellogg, Rachel Lipman, and me, Jason Rosenbaum.
The show is edited by Fred Ehrlich. Read all of our coverage at stlpr.org. And if you haven't already, make sure to subscribe to Politically Speaking by searching the term Politically Speaking on Apple Podcasts. From St. Louis Public Radio. This is Politically Speaking.
The Gateway brings you the day's news each weekday from around the St. Louis region and the state capitals in Jefferson City.
Our schools are accredited. We don't need this bill.
And Springfield.
How many more years must pass before lawmakers see time is of the essence?
I'm Abby Larico. Join me each weekday for The Gateway on the STLPR app or wherever you get podcasts.